I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, and welcome to Pattern Portraits, an artwork and podcast by me, Lauren Godfrey. Each episode, I speak with a fellow pattern lover in the creative industries about their relationship to pattern and colour, and how surrounding themselves with pattern serves as a kind of armour. Each guest has selected some textiles special to them, which we will discuss, using the patterns to delve into their stories. I've also created an accompanying artwork, an abstract pattern portrait of the sitter through their patterns made from jesmonite inlaid with perspex and brass, and a resulting print will be available to purchase. There'll be an exhibition of all the artworks, and the prints are available on my website, laurengodfrey.co.uk. Follow Lauren Godfrey Studio and Pattern Portraits Podcast on Instagram to stay in the loop. Hello, and welcome to Pattern Portraits. Today I'm speaking with Karen Maben, an illustrator and founder of her eponymous brand, Karen Maben. She makes pyjamas, scarves, swimwear and more in the most joyful, playful patterns of your dreams. Think Tamagotchis, cats in pumpkin costumes and ski bunnies, foxes scavenging in bins and chocolate factories to rival Willy Wonka. If you can dream it, she's done it. Even if you can't dream it, she's done it. Karen has collaborated with cultural icons from Agatha Christie to the Queen, and most recently, our true queen, Barbie. Her clothes and accessories have been worn by celebrities worldwide, including Jessica Alba, Selma Blair, and Anna from Frozen herself, Kristen Bell. Full disclosure, I'm supremely lucky to be able to call Karen one of my best friends. I've been there for the highs and lows, from the late night trade shows to the thrills of movie premieres. We even collaborated on a pop-up swimwear shop in Lisbon a few years ago. I'm excited to finally be able to ask her the hard-hitting pattern-based questions on everybody's lips. Welcome, Karen Maben, to Pattern Portraits.
Oh, that was so nice.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
It's nice to
have
you.
Oh, that was really emotional listening to that. You have been there for the highs and the lows.
All the way. So I start every podcast by asking my guest, what does pattern mean for you?
Oh, that's a good question. And I have listened to some of your other podcasts, so I should have been prepared for it, but I'm not. Pattern, I don't even think about it, really. I think it's just something that's everywhere and I'm drawn to, and I just see a surface and I just feel like every surface could be benefited with pattern, or could be improved with pattern, I should say. I love it in my home, on my belongings, on everything. I think about it all the time. I see patterns everywhere that I go. It's just what my life is about and I'm obsessed with it.
Nice. Yeah, it feels like a missed opportunity if something is unpatterned.
Definitely.
What do you do?
It's far too plain. Yeah, definitely.
Tell me about your first fabric that you've chosen.
I guess I'll start with the one that I've got in front of me. It's obviously really hard for me to choose. You said 3 to 6, and I think I've chosen 5. It's really hard for me to choose because everything that I do is pattern. All my clothes are patterned. I have a very sort of strong sentimental attachment to my wardrobe, which is why it's so extensive. But I went to the studio this morning and I looked through, I have an old box in the studio of some archive things. I'm quite ruthless when it comes to things that we make and sample as a brand. We sort of clear things out quite a lot, and I don't really hold on to things unless they feel really, really special, because we do a lot of projects. But the one I've brought in is the first scarf I ever made, which was, it's printed with an illustration I did probably about 12 or 13 years ago of some gymnasts. It's printed on silk, hand finished myself, and I guess I brought it in because it's sort of what started my business off and started everything, and everything since that's happened since then has snowballed from this. So it was at the bottom of a box, and I thought, it's so sort of sad to look at, and I thought, oh, it's nice to sort of hold on to something that has such sentimentality.
Why is it sad to look at it?
I don't know. I think compared to the sort of sophistication, and the last image I sent you of pattern is probably one of the most recent designs I did. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, looking at them comparatively, it feels so unsophisticated. It's so I'm quite embarrassed about it. Like, I'm obviously holding on to it, but I would never show it to anyone else as part of like my archive. But to me, it kind of holds. It sort of says so much to me about the kind of rudimentary way that I started my business. It was very kind of figuring things out and DIY and very lo-fi as I started. And to me, it sums up that kind of era of my life where I had this idea in my head of what I wanted the business to be like, but nothing was really coming together. Everything felt really clunky. It wasn't quite right. There was lots of figuring things out. And I suppose when I talk about my business now, it's quite nice to talk to you about it because you're probably one of my only friends who's seen the whole journey, and it's so easy especially with social media to kind of gloss over those early stages and only present like a sort of point of perfection where everything is really finished. But yeah, it's quite nice to sort of think about the start, I guess.
And you studied silversmithing and jewellery, is that right?
Yeah, I did, at the Royal College of Art.
And so how did that then feed through into making non-kind of jewellery accessories? Like, what was the shift from making kind of literal jewellery to something more textile-based?
I think for me, I've always, drawing and painting always came most naturally to me, and then I went to art school and ended up doing this jewellery course because it felt like the only course which gave a really kind of broad education in materials. I'm interested in things. Like, I like drawing and painting, and that's great, but like, what my passion is stuff. I love shops. I'm a consumer. I love product. I love clothes. I love everything. I love going to, like, that's where I think that's something you and I have in common.
Yeah, we love a kind of look around liberty.
Yeah, I think that
touching, like, all the stuff.
Exactly. Whenever I have a day where I just I'm lacking inspiration, I don't know what I'm doing, I go to Liberty or Selfridges, and I just find that sort of sensory overload of being in a shop or a department store. It's my favorite place in the world. So I was always interested in making things, and I guess I had a bit of it took a long time for me to sort of find where I wanted my practice to sit, because I was interested in jewellery, but I kind of was more interested in sort of how I could marry those two things, like making sort of three-dimensional objects but also drawing and painting. And then just as I graduated, I thought about, I went to the shop in York and I found this silk scarf that had like muscle, it was like an old Liberty one that had muscle shells drawn on it, and I just thought how beautiful. And then I thought, this is kind of an accessory. It's almost like a piece of jewellery itself. And then I thought, maybe that's something I could do. And that's sort of what started everything.
It's sort of the perfect loophole. It's like you're making artworks, but they happen to be wearable. And it's sort of like, oh, yes.
Exactly.
Why didn't we all think of that? It's so nice.
It's like an artwork that you can sort of pick it up and take it everywhere with you and pass it down. I liked the sort of heirloom aspect of silk scarves as well, and how they were kind of commemorative. I thought that there was a sort of wider kind of cultural shorthand there that I was interested in, and that's sort of why I started with scarves. But obviously since then it's kind of grown arms and legs.
It's so nice. What's interesting about this print that you've brought in is it looks almost like it's faded, but I think maybe it's just always was quite, I think it's pared just, down colours,
like, yeah,
quite, yeah.
I think at that point I was quite inspired by sort of vintagey sort of mid-century prints and textiles, and I suppose they have like a bit more of a faded look. I was looking a lot at like lithographic book covers from the 1950s and prints, trying to sort of take that feeling of having limited colour palette and enforce it on the digital print where you can have any colour that you want. And I think sometimes for me, like putting a bit of restriction in place was quite helpful
in creating
patterns that look a bit more sophisticated.
Do you ever wear this one?
No, I don't actually wear my own stuff that, I mean, I that's not true. I sleep in Carmé pajamas every night and that is the official line and that is true. But I very rarely wear things of mine. I just find it embarrassing. I don't know why. I it's a very complicated relationship I have with having an eponymous brand where I find it very embarrassing to be Karen Maven of Karen Maven. I actually called it, I had an equally embarrassing name for it when I first started. It was called Red Brick, and then I had a meeting with Liberty and Ed Bristell, who was the manager director, said it's much more marketable if you have a woman's name. Think about Emma Bridgewater and Sonia Rykiel and Stella McCartney, and you know, listed hundreds. And I thought, okay, fine. And I think they were like, we'll buy the collection, but we want to call it Karen Maven.
So okay.
I said, yeah, fine.
Oh, right. So I didn't realise it was Liberty that had swerved that
for
you.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they said it's like an easy sell if it's a woman's name. I don't know why.
I would do anything Liberty told me to.
Exactly.
Do, so.
I was so desperate to get the collection there that I thought, yeah, fine. And I never really thought about the repercussions of having your name above the door. And I don't know. I feel like, I guess every artist and designer has that complicated relationship between your own ego and wanting to make work and the reasons for making work, and I don't know. I've never really been somebody that wants to be the center of attention, but I do like making the work and I like the response that it gets. And I guess I wonder if that's the difference between like an artist and a designer is like a designer, you're kind of creating something that's specifically for other people. With the work that I do now, I think that there's definitely like a conversation between me and the customers, and I'm always kind of thinking about what they want and the, I guess like the Karen Maven customer, that person, and what they would like to wear.
There's a really nice story as to how you ended up having your collection in Liberty. Can you tell the listeners about that?
I can, thank you. It's quite an embarrassing story. I lived in York and I read about this competition in Grazia where you could queue up outside the Grazia. It was like between Grazia and Liberty, you had to queue up outside the Grazia headquarters and show your designs to a panel, and then the winners would get their collection stocked in Liberty. And so I had no money. I took the megabus down really early in the morning at 6 o'clock, and I got there and there was a huge queue and everyone was dressed up in really flamboyant outfits, and I felt really, I had my scarves with me and I was like, oh God, what am I doing here? And I queued up and everyone had steamers and I hadn't brought anything and I didn't know what I was doing. And I got in and the panel was Roland Murray, the fashion designer, Peter Jensen, who's a fashion designer as well. And then it was some journalist from Grazia, I can't actually remember who it was, and Ed Bristell, who was from Liberty. And I could tell that they really liked the scarves. But they were quite, and they were kind of finding them quite funny. And then Roland Murray was like, your scarves are so colourful, but you dress so boring.
Oh.
And I felt so embarrassed. But I thought was quite a flamboyant outfit. I had like a black top and an orange skirt and like brown shoes. and then I got the bus back and I felt really embarrassed about the whole thing. And then I found out that I'd won and Liberty bought the collection. But this is one of those things, isn't it, where I guess, like looking back, I feel like that was probably my big break, but it didn't really feel like it at the time because Liberty placed the order and then I still had to figure out how I was going to get it made and I had to fund it. And you know, I think they ordered, like, people think, oh, sometimes with these things like with department stores, they think, oh wow, you must be, you know, that must be a huge order, you probably made it, but like I think they ordered like 12 pieces or something,
right?
Yeah. And then to meet the minimums I had to do 40 of each.
Okay.
And it's difficult, and I had to find a factory that would make, you know, make some but not too many.
Yeah. I suppose it probably gave you the rocket up your bum and the kind of confidence, like the leap of faith that they took in you to then be like, okay, well, I'll give them the 12 and then what am I going to do with these other 38?
Yeah.
Oh, I better do a trade show and then I better do this and this and this. And like, it probably, as you say, it kind of snowballed from there because you had no choice. You'd spent that money, you had to make it back.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And it was kind of like, okay, here's a purpose. And I think when I sometimes think about business in general, it's like, you get these sort of moments where sometimes it's so hard, it's such a roller coaster, and you'll know as well from your personal practice, like it's sometimes it's really hard to kind of keep motivating yourself, and sometimes you just all you need is like that one positive sign, and it was like, okay, this purpose, this store wants to buy it. It does seem more linear when I think about it retrospectively, because the collection got into Liberty, and then Le Bon Marché saw it, and then I could exhibit in Paris, and other people were interested. And I think like having that sort of I guess like the sort of shop window of being there gave people a lot more confidence in the brand that they might otherwise not have.
That's really nice. And you've been running the brand for 10 years now?
Yes, 10 years.
Amazing.
Thanks.
10 years. It's so exciting. You were talking about how you had to find someone to manufacture them. And how do you go about sort of actually getting numbers of scarves made? And how do you make sure that the drawings that you make in the studio have translated faithfully to the final product? Like, can you talk us through that process?
Yeah, of course. So with that first... well, I guess with the scarf I have in front of me, that was a company in England that were making printing onto silk. And I wasn't really happy with the sort of the colour penetration. With digital print, it's quite a different process to what I was used to doing at art school, where I did a lot of screen printing. And also, like, this is, you know, 10, 12 years old now. And the technology has moved on so far since then. Mm. But I think my first step was to find a factory. And it's really impersonal sometimes with email. So I think I just flew to Italy and got a bus to Lake Como and went to visit the factory myself. And I think they probably felt sorry for me. And the factory who I still work with, the manager Mauricio, was like, look, we can slightly reduce the minimums for you if you really want to do this. And I think that, yeah, I think going there in person and looking at stuff, I mean, it's a product at the end of the day. And I'm so passionate about product and what it's like and the touch and feel of things. And I just don't think that it ever translates. It's always so different, isn't it, when you see things digitally? Mm. So it's always been like a very tactile process, and a lot of sampling and a lot of Pantones. I have like a Pantone color book, and I printed a Pantone sheet out onto silk. So I know what the exact, I'm quite particular about colors. So I guess, like, I suppose it's just to get the accuracy right, I guess it's just like a lot of sampling and a lot of back and forth.
I'd love to see that silk Pantone
match. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, everybody loves it.
I can't believe I've never seen that before.
Yeah, it's quite big.
Where did you get the tenacity to be like, I'm just going to fly to Italy and turn up at the factories?
Oh, I don't know. I think I feel like when I think back, it's pathetic, but I'd graduated. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't prepared for the sort of graduation wasteland of not really having much going on. You kind of leave. I was at the RCA and people, you know, you have so much attention and you have crits every week, and then you go from that to sort of nothing. Mm. And it was not a great sort of time. It was a recession, and there were job opportunities, but there weren't really anything that I really wanted to do. So I think it was the tenacity was just having nothing to lose and feeling like, okay, well, I'll just... You know, I don't have any money, so I'll just use it on flying to Italy and taking a chance. I think I wouldn't do it now, like having 10 years on, having the responsibility and knowing what I know about the industry and having a family and a mortgage, like I would never do it. And I'm so glad I did.
Mm, it's interesting, isn't it? But then I think often naivety and kind of ignorance is the blissful place to be when you're entering an industry maybe that you don't know that much about. You can just storm in and be like, oh, hi,
yeah. I'm here. I know. Now I think I'm so much more aware of sort of protocol and you know, speaking in a certain way and knowing all the lingo, whereas back then I was just like, just turn up, why not? And perhaps there's something charming about that. But when you're 20, 22, 23, 24, you can behave like that.
Yeah, I remember that from art school, like if you wanted something welding or powder coating, you had to like just walk around the places where they do that and be like, hi, could you just add this in?
Yeah, exactly, please?
Maybe it would be a nice time to talk about the Cats bomber jacket.
Yeah, so I picked three fabrics from that I've designed. And the second one, it's a bomber jacket with cats all over it. It was from in 2009, I did a collaboration with Monoprix, which is the French version of Marks & Spencer's. It's a department store and they have hundreds of stores. So I did this huge project. It was I think it was over 150 product lines. I worked on it for 2 years and it all kind of culminated in amazing launch. I designed shop windows for the Champs-Élysées. It was next to Chanel. It was like an absolute career highlight. And I even look back now and I think, I can't believe that happened. And this is my favourite piece in the collection. It was a bomber jacket with cats all over it. I think for France, they're quite conservative in their fashion. And I think it was quite a bold piece for them to include into the collection. But I was quite insistent about having it, and I'm glad I did. I still have it in my wardrobe, and it has such fond memories for me. And I think I got to that point when, after I'd done that project, I felt like with my business, if I don't do anything else, if I close it down now, if nothing else happens, like, it will objectively have been a success, and I'm really proud of what I achieved, and it meant a lot to me. So that's why I had to include this in the pattern.
That's interesting. I guess it's always an interesting question, what's the measure of success?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's kind of outward things like walking along the Champs-Élysées and being able to see your... I mean, that sounds pretty successful.
It was
to
amazing,
me.
Yeah. And I think at the time as well, I was aware that this isn't going to happen perhaps never again. And even if it doesn't, I feel like that will be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's really special. This cat bomber jacket, is it something that you wear sometimes, or is it something...
No, I don't think actually, like, in terms of the quality of the collection, it's not the most structurally integral. So I don't, it's very delicate. It's made of, like, it's made of silk, I think. But yeah, so I don't wear it very often, but I have two. I have one archived in the studio and one which is mine, and I wear it sometimes. But yeah, I think I sort of wear it to the wedding sometimes. But then again, it's such a conversation. I have to be feeling quite confident to wear it, because it sparks conversations, and I say, oh, I designed it. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm in the mood to be that person, and sometimes I'm not.
That's really interesting. I think the reason I really like pattern is because it sparks conversations.
Yeah.
And people comment, and then it kind of is an icebreaker.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very particular thing to then be like, yeah, I designed it.
Yeah.
And like, how to get the delivery of that so that it doesn't come across as like supremely arrogant.
Exactly.
But also it's like, you should be proud.
That's exactly
it. It's amazing, and most people couldn't do that. So
I think they probably could. Think I don't know. I think, like, I love wearing pattern myself, and some of my favorite clothes, like I said before, like, I love brands like Marnie, Le Dubaget, Stella McCartney, brands where like great conversational print is at the heart of what they do, and that's like what I hope that my brand is like. But there's just something that I personally, and it's not because I'm not proud of the designs, it's not because I don't think they work, it's just there's a barrier there for me, and I guess it's protecting boundaries. I'm just not that kind of person that wants to talk about myself. Like, I should say that in the context of me being on a podcast, which is ridiculous. But
yeah, leave now.
Yeah. I just don't like talking about myself. Ask me more questions.
We don't believe you.
I don't know. Maybe it's like when you're wearing something that you've designed. When I'm in this context, when I'm at the studio, when I'm doing work stuff, I'm like, I'm prepared for it. I've kind of got my work hat on, and I've got in that character of being this person who's a designer. And I think it's like, there's something about walking about your daily business with a garment on that might spark conversation, and not knowing if you're wanting to have that conversation that time. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it kind of catches up with you. I conversely am wearing a Karen Maben piece today.
It
one
looks
of my
fabulous.
Favorite. It's the leopards. How do we call them? Fashion leopards?
A leopard can't change its spots.
A leopard can't change its spots slip dress. But I love wearing something by you, because
you.
People speak to me about it, and then I'm incredibly proud, and I say, oh, my friend Karen made it.
That's
and
nice.
You can look it up, and I always have a lot of conversations about it, so it's a nice talking point.
I'm happy you said that, because I think that when I design prints, that's a big part of it, is wanting them to be conversational, or having almost like Easter eggs or things that speak to people, like an element of nostalgia or something where it feels personal to people.
Yeah. How do you go about working out what you're gonna do the next print of, or where's the inspiration coming from?
I don't know. I think people ask me all the time, where do you get your ideas from, and I wish I knew, because it never happens when I want it to. I have like deadlines all the time, and yeah, whenever I'm sort of sitting in my studio trying to think of an idea, I can't. And then just every so often I'll just, and it's sort of like the concept, but then sometimes like the colours and the whole thing will like pop into my head. I was visiting my parents in the north of Scotland, and I got an idea for a shoreline one, just sort of walking on the beach, and that's quite obvious.
That's
Yeah, but sometimes it's just like a phrase or something someone will say, or an idiom, and you think, oh, that sounds funny or strange.
I think that when your brain is in off mode is when you're most creative. Yeah. So I often find if I'm like on holiday, maybe in like a museum in another city or something, and walking around, and then I'm suddenly like, oh my god, I just want to get home and do this thing that I've thought of, but I need to enjoy being on holiday while I'm here.
My dad actually just told me this Picasso quote that was I think I can't remember what the context was, but someone asked Picasso why he spends so much time in the studios, in his studio, and he said, when inspiration strikes, I want to be working. So I guess there's that kind of, sometimes I feel like I have to be, the more I do, more work I do, the more inspiration I have. But I suppose it's just like the idea is like, when you have the idea, you're already working, so you can kind of act on it quickly. But yeah, I don't know where they come from. And sometimes it's like, you know, if I'm working to a brief or with someone like Agatha Christie, then that's more straightforward because it's like, okay, I'll just go and get lost in that world for a bit and see what kind of jumps out and feels like it could translate well to being a pattern.
Yeah, you've done some incredible collaborations. Most recently, the Barbie one, which we're all giddy about.
Thanks.
Tell me how they come about and how you approach them.
It sort of depends. So we have an agent who kind of brokers collaborations at this stage. So yeah, I mean, I guess there's earlier ones I did. I can't really think. I think the first one was with Anthropology, and I think I just emailed them cold and said, I'd love to do something for you. And they're a really lovely company, and I've been working with them for 10 years. They're very loyal. And I just went into the studio and had a chat, and that felt really exciting to me. And I think they commissioned a print. So that was the first time. And then I did something with the Ford Museum. I just sort of said yes to a lot of things. At the beginning, I said yes to everything, probably from like a luxury brand point of view. I probably said yes to too much. But I had that. I think that was my whole attitude of like starting the business, is to say yes to things. And I also just enjoyed it. Like I'm curious about environments that you don't normally get to go to or new, like, I guess. Yeah, I love people. I love people's stories. I like new things. I'm interested in everything. So anything that came up that, you know, I was interested in, I'm interested in learning more about, you know,
The Freud Museum.
Yeah,
I think there's really nice scope with the scarves that they can kind of fit any mold somehow. Yeah. And yet they still hold your identity, and that's something really kind of unusual, I think, as a brand, that you're able to be quite malleable to fit in with something else.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that the collaborators I worked with are all so nice and flexible. So yeah, at the beginning it was just sort of whatever. I just worked hard and produced a lot of volume, and I think now I'm definitely more selective about what we do. So yeah, we have Lisa, who's our wonderful agent, who kind of brokers collaborations. So she said to us a couple of years ago, I think the last one that we did before that was Sony, was with Peter Rabbit, and then she was which is lovely.
And you did Minions as well. I've forgotten Minions. About all these, like,
It's funny. So we've kind of stumbled across this like thing that exists in marketing where like film marketers of films or things that are coming out want to try and sort of seed their brand in the popular conscious as much as possible by doing different collaborations. And we kind of fit in a nice place where it's like, we represent a sort of like independent shopper.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a different, we occupy a different space. And yeah, Lisa said, you know, who would be your dream collaboration? This is way before I knew about the film. I said, Barbie, obviously.
Right.
Like, yeah, she's amazing. She's iconic. I was like obsessed with the idea of like dipping into her world and having the permission to kind of produce stuff with her face on it. And it took a long time to get to kind of, we were working with Mattel and they're very, very protective over her image.
Right.
So there was a lot of back and forth, and I think it probably took like a year and a half to get the design right. And during which point we discovered that the film was happening, and
okay.
It just, you know, everything kind of collided and it all happened at the same time.
So it was happening in spite of the film?
It was happening already, with Mattel. And so they have movie partners and they have brand partners, and we're a brand partner. So we were working with Barbie anyway, and they were like, you know, with this really exciting things happening with the film. We didn't know it was Margot Robbie. We were like, all right, thought it was going to be like, you know, the Bratz movie or something.
Right. Yeah, but I guess it could have gone a really other way.
Exactly. And it turned out to be this like amazing cultural moment. And we just happened to be in like
the right place at the right time.
Yeah, exactly.
So good.
It was really good. So I'm really, really proud of that collection. And I'm proud that it was also the first time I guess as a designer, where I wasn't allowed to just go nuts and draw the Barbies. I had to work with the archive imagery. So it was the first time I was taking someone else's graphics and illustrations and kind of collaging them together, and almost like collaging them within the garment as well. So I kind of almost turned it down. And then I guess I had this like ego struggle where I was like, oh, does it always have to be like, what is the Karen Maben handwriting? Does it always have to be something I've like physically drawn by hand? And then I thought, well, I can't not have this opportunity to work with Barbie. So I'll just work with what they've given me and try and make it look as much my brand identity as possible through the kind of cut and paste, I guess, look of the product. And yeah, we've done sort of like collaged contrast trim and the shapes of the garments, and the kind of the way that it's all put together, I think definitely has the energy of the brand. But it's it was a bit of a departure for me too, and it was interesting, and I'm really delighted about how it's come out.
Yeah, and as you should be.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. You kind of answered this question already by saying your dream collaboration was Barbie, but now you've done it. What's your dream collaboration?
Oh god, I have a whole list. Like,
let's manifest
ridiculous
it.
Ones. Gucci, obviously. Yes. Louis Vuitton. I don't know. I'd love to do something with like a really, really massive design house.
But cool.
Coca-Cola, they're all on the list.
Wasn't there a Diet Coke thing? Are we not allowed to talk about that?
We are, but it didn't happen.
Oh.
It was. Oh, this is probably something that's worth talking about, is that for every Barbie, there's probably 1,000 collaborations that haven't happened, and it's really hard. I mean, we had this conversation 2 weeks ago when I can't name who it is, but a collaboration I really, really, really wanted to happen didn't. And it's so hard to kind of pick yourself up again when something doesn't happen, and it happened. And sometimes it just hits you harder than other times. And I think, yeah, I really wanted it to go through. And I think there were a couple of things that all fell through at the same time. And I just felt like, oh, like sometimes, especially after 10 years, it's hard to kind of get the energy to be like, re-motivate yourself.
Mm.
And I have a team of 7 now, and it's not just me I have to motivate, it's everybody. And it's hard when the team has been excited about something happening and it doesn't, and you're kind of dealing with a kind of collective disappointment.
Mm. Onwards and upwards.
Onwards and upwards.
It's their loss.
Yeah.
It's their loss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Can you tell me about your next fabric?
It's a Burberry trench coat, a classic Burberry trench coat with a bright pink trim. And I remember, I got it. I'm not rich. I bought it through a friend, worked at Burberry, and there was a sample sale.
They have the most epic sample sales at Burberry.
Amazing. I love it so much. I've never owned anything that expensive and that exquisite and beautiful. And I remember wearing it in Paris and women coming up to me asking where it was from so often, and even in restaurants. And I just feel like, I guess I wanted to bring it up because I suppose that's the essence of this podcast, is sort of the transformative power of pattern, of wearing something, of clothes,
yeah.
And how it can make you feel. And I don't know, as someone who works in the fashion industry, I suppose at this point as well, we're kind of constantly forced to think about, you know, the creation of new products. And, you know, I always feel aware of how much we're putting out into the world. And I do think that it's still okay that there are beautifully made things, and it's all right to celebrate things that are new and that are made, and that are made well, and that are made sustainably and ethically. And I love that trench coat so much. And it makes me feel like a grown up. I can't describe it. I remember once you and I were walking in London Fields, and there was a guy who had a on-trend trench, Burberry trench, and we both said, and it was like dip dyed, and we were both like, imagine wearing, imagine, we couldn't get our head right, like, imagine not only having a Burberry trench coat but having an on-trend one, and now I'm that person. I love it.
made it come true.
I've made it come, manifested it for myself. But I just love clothes so much. I love clothes, and I love it. I love the way that they can make you feel a different way, or they're almost like a sort of costume or a mask, I suppose.
Yeah, and I suppose the Burberry trench is such a language.
It's
like comes from a kind of such a deeply entrenched, pun intended, canon in Britishness and what it is to be British, maybe. I mean, I'm sure that's kind of it. It's also a complicated print because it's been appropriated lots of times by lots of different environments, and I'm sure Burberry have battled to sort of work out how they position themselves in relation to the classic Burberry check.
Yeah, definitely.
The print on yours is on the interior, is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's on the interior.
So but it's a cheeky flash.
It's a cheeky flash, but I like it when people can see the lining. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I tie it so that it's more obvious. I don't know. I think also coming from a place of like never having been able to own something that comfortable, I guess it feels differently. And the way that I consume luxury products is probably different to somebody else because of not coming from money and not even growing up in a place where you could see these things. Like, it was always just things that were in magazines, and it always just like felt like such a sort of distant dream. There was nowhere in Scotland really you could go and even like look at a Burberry trench coat. The only way you could see them is like watching. I used to babysit these kids, and they had VHS recordings of Sex and City, and I would watch them. And when I was like 17, and just think, wow, imagine like wearing heels everywhere. That would be so great. And I guess like it's a part of a bit of a fantasy for me. Mm. But I don't know. I think my whole problems in life become because nothing ever lives up to my imagination that I have for myself.
I think Sex and the City has a lot to answer for that aspirational sort of daily dressing up thing, which I definitely think is really empowering. The kind of Carrie approach to like walking through puddles in Milano Blahnik stilettos and like sort of embracing the everyday glam.
You definitely do that, right?
I try.
I think that for me, I think I dress differently when my confidence is definitely reflected in how I dress, and when I feel more confident, I reach for different items in my wardrobe. It's all tied up with, I guess, how I feel and time, and how much time I feel is worthy of spending on myself.
Mm.
And I suppose that's to do with like ego and how confident I feel and how much time I think is deserved. I deserve to spend on myself, I suppose.
Mm.
When I had my daughter, I remember just not looking at my wardrobe and being like, I will never wear these clothes again.
Mm.
And now obviously I do. But
they've come back round.
But I think when I've listened to some of your earlier podcasts, and especially your conversation with Rosie Nicholas, I think that's so interesting. The notion of how your clothes empower you and the idea that, you know, they sort of sit in your wardrobe and sometimes they kind of come round, and sometimes you feel like being a certain person, sometimes you don't.
It's a real they kind of loom at you sometimes when you're in a low place, and they're like, hey, why aren't you wearing us? You're just getting those jeans again. When I had my kid, I worked out a sort of uniform that I could pick up every day that felt like me. It was like a pair of jeans that had a kind of cheeky little face drawn on them, and there was another pair actually that had a sort of winking eye on the knee, and then like
them.
A fun patterned top, but they were like really kind of basic clothes in a lot of ways, but they felt comfortable. I could breastfeed in them. I could crawl around on the floor picking up Lego in them. I could or like clambering through a soft play. But they gave me the feeling of myself. But now I can't wear those things because when I look back on them, they feel of a very particular time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm.
Oh, we haven't spoken about that before.
I
remember that. I mean, I feel the same. I think there's a sort of like mum uniform that I kind of like fell into the trap of, and I didn't like it. I didn't feel like myself at all. And I bought clothes because they were practical, and that's not me. I like impractical stuff. I always have. That's my whole thing. I like wearing a sequined top in the middle of the day, or like, you know, clothes that are evening wear in the day wear. I mean, maybe that's just an indie sleaze thing, but like
it will come back. Or has it already come back?
I think it's coming back. It's on its way. Definitely.
This leads on really nicely to the next pattern, which is the baby grow with bites on.
I chose this one because I actually am quite ruthless when it comes to baby clothes, but I couldn't bear to throw this one out. It was my favorite one, and it's a baby grow with bikes on it from Pitti Bateau. I also felt like, I guess like with Vivian too, my daughter, I felt I had an idea of what it was going to be like to have a daughter, and I bought loads of dresses and stuff when I was pregnant and had them all lined up and hanging up, and then as soon as I met her, I was like, oh, this isn't very you at all.
Ah, that's interesting.
And she's active, she's on the go. She has her own style, which is weird to say of a baby, but she does. Mm. And she has her own personality. And the bike, it's hard to find things that are quite, are not so, I don't know, gendered, I guess. I wanted something that was just had nice patterns on, and it's not easy to find. That was one that I kept. And I'm not that sentimental about Vivian aging. I'm not one of these people that's like, oh, I wish that she was that tiny again. I love her getting older, and every day, like, I find it so exciting and wondrous is the only word I can describe it, like watching her personality come out. Me and Jamie, my husband, and Vivian went on a holiday to Skye, which was a really bad idea because there's nowhere to go with babies, but she wore that when we were there, and it was like the first time I'd taken her back to Scotland, and I have quite fond memories of it. So I had to include that.
That's nice. And the bikes feel significant somehow.
I don't know. I suppose my husband loves cycling. Yeah. And that's why I bought it, because I was like, oh, this is fun. Maybe. I just thought, well, maybe we'll go cycling together in the future.
That's nice. I remember you made Jamie a cycling jersey as well, which is really pretty special.
Thank you. Yeah, he loves cycling. I made him a cycling jersey with a tiger print on it. The thing about Jamie is like he is so enthusiastic, and I don't think that I didn't do any product testing, so it's probably not very I don't know what the word is, aerodynamic for cycling, but he's so enthusiastic and throws himself into everything with gusto, and he's probably like my number one fan and cheerleader.
Aww,
so he wore it on every cycle, and I think he told everybody that I'd made it.
Didn't you make a few for like a group of them going cycling?
I did, for my friends that went, I forgot about that, went to France.
That's really nice.
Yeah, I made them all cycling jerseys,
whole fleet of them. And I remember like Jamie's is kind of pink, and
it's pink with a sort of tiger and coming out of some cherry blossom trees. I forgot about that. I did that just as a present for them.
Yeah, you're very good at the kind of bespoke gift, or sort of getting like a quilt made, or like a special thing that's kind
of it's quite nice. I've discovered the world of pajamas for bridesmaids, and when my friends get married, I've discovered I can give them that's quite a nice gift.
That's nice,
which is
that's
good.
And it is something that you also do as a service. You make
bridal
pajamas.
Not really advertising it, but we do. Interested.
What kind of patterns were surrounding you as a child? You grew up in the Black Isle in Scotland, and your dad is an artist.
Is an artist, but I think like visually our style of drawing is quite different. He paints a lot of really beautiful landscapes, and my style is very much influenced by what I was consuming as a teenager, and which is just everything. I loved Greece too.
Specificity of Greece too.
Specifically, and Greece too.
I know you well enough to understand that, but also like it's so weird.
I'm quite obsessive with things, and I don't know if it's like a comfort thing, but like I will like watch films obsessively, and I think that the aesthetic of Grease 2 is so much of my aesthetic as a designer can be pinned back to Grease 2.
Maybe I need to watch it again through
everything,
your eyes.
Multiples, the high contrast.
Who's that guy?
Yeah, exactly. Love Grease 2. I suppose I just watch the same things everyone else did. A lot of American shows that we watched on Saturday morning, Nickelodeon, that kind of aesthetic. I didn't have Sky though, so I guess that's why it became even more appealing. And especially in the Highlands, we couldn't really have, we could have channels 1, 2, 3, 4, but I only knew one. I had one friend, Kirsten, who had Sky, and we used to go to her house and it was just the most exciting thing, and all they wanted to do was watch MTV. But if you I think there's something about it being like, if you don't have it, if you're not allowed to, I mean, I wasn't allowed to watch South Park, and that became really appealing as well. I wonder if like this is for things have become forbidden, they kind of take on a different meaning.
Very much so. As a parent, I now understand that really? Like, things being forbidden just makes them far more interesting.
Yeah. My mum tells a story about when a boy in my village, who I won't name because he's probably not gonna listen to this podcast.
You never know.
he wasn't allowed, we weren't allowed much sugar, but he wasn't allowed any sugar, and she caught him licking a Twister ice lolly wrapper out of a bin. And I think that says it all. But perhaps that was what MTV was to me. The
yes.
Twister discarded wrapper. So appealing.
Frank.
I think I became completely obsessed with, I don't know if that's where my obsession with like celebrities and everything came from, but like I just grew up so far removed.
It brings us quite nicely on to my question about celebrity clients of yours.
Oh,
because
great.
You really like, there's some top people wearing your stuff, and every time it happens it like doesn't get boring when you send me a WhatsApp of like, look, it's Selma Blair in it, or
Lauren. You'll know more than anybody how exciting it is for me, because I love celebrities so much, and I don't make things because I hope that they'll wear them, but when it happens it's like the most exciting thing.
Yeah,
it's incredible. I mean, it's just, people get excited and send them to me, and I'm just as excited. I'm the most excited person. I mean, I think it was 2 years ago, Kate Beckinsale wore them Christmas Day. She's got a big fluffy cat, and she had the cats dressed up, and it was so exciting. Gillian Anderson wore them this Christmas. Jessica Alba wore them to get ready for the Oscars. And Kate Hudson.
Mm.
Oh, amazing, amazing. I find it so exciting.
And you've got a big fan club in like the female comedy world, particularly in the UK.
They get
like,
it.
Yeah.
Funny women.
Why do you think that is?
Because it's funny.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think that there's like a sense of humour. Maybe it's not like on the surface, but like there's a sense of humour in what it is. And it's like, you know, I know that it's just silly cats and dogs dressed up, but let's not take ourselves too seriously and let's just enjoy it. And I think that probably if you have a sense of humour, you kind of get on board maybe.
And it's quite a nice kind of way of showing their intentions. Like, I'm not turning up in a black t-shirt. I'm like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like bringing it already.
Yeah.
You just see me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love that you play a part in that. Really,
I love
nice.
It too. I love comedians. Although my favourite comedian is Harry Hill.
Oh, well, you can get him in them. You just need to make a longer collar.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, do like, a special do edition for him.
For Harry Hill.
With an extra big collar.
I think if he wore them, I think that would be the one celebrity where I would just be so starstruck.
Could you tell me about your final fabric?
The final one is the Summer Garden pyjama design. And I think that I included this because, yeah, I don't know. It just, without being too personal, I felt like after I had my daughter, I felt like I'd been to space, and I couldn't really imagine. I felt like I completely lost my identity, and I couldn't really imagine making work again. And that was the first design I did. And after, yeah, it felt hard to figure out how I was going to do it or get any inspiration. And like, if when you have a baby, it's wonderful, but your world really shrinks down.
Mm.
And I wasn't able to do the normal things I did for, like, to, you know, to get inspiration. So I couldn't go into town. I suppose I could, but I felt nervous and I didn't really want to. And I was just watching box sets on the sofa, and the whole life felt like it wasn't very me. And I think it was like designing the collection that made me kind of reconnect to who I was, or who I was before having a baby. But also like taking on the nice parts too, not being like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm a new version of myself, hopefully with some improvements from the, you know, the wonderful experience of like of being so selfless for
I
a while.
You don't need to beat too much around the bush that the first year particularly of having a baby is so hard.
It is hard, but I don't think for everyone. I just find
maybe
it really
not.
Hard.
I
don't know.
It really hard.
I find it really hard. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I feel like I can't really, I wouldn't want to complain about it because it's so incredibly lucky. Of course, I mean, you're incredibly lucky. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, but it's also, it's really hard. And I feel proud of myself for being able to make some work. It's hard as well because I look at social media all the time, and you know this, I say all the time, I don't understand how this person has a baby and they've done this. I don't understand how they've done this. I don't. And now I'm that person probably where people look and think, how do you have a 1 year old and you're, you know, at the Barbie premiere and you've done four collections and you've done this, this and this. And it's, you know, it's because I have like a team of people that now work for me. But also I think that doing work and doing drawing was the one thing that made me feel like myself again.
That's really nice. Yeah, and nice. And this one kind of reminds me of, it's got a really nice sort of depth and history. It sort of brings up William Morris kind of fronds of curling sweet peas and things. Can you tell me a bit about sort of print designers that you admire or things that you turn to?
Yeah, I've always really loved William Morris, of course, and Swedish designers like Joseph Frank. I never really look that much at textile designers because I think whenever I do, I just get too bogged down in it and I end up trying to copy them badly. So I've always tried to get inspiration from different places, and I've always looked at children's books. And I think having a baby, I was like looking at them again and revisiting, like, you know, Pat Albeck and who did The Tiger Who Came to Tea? Judith Kerr?
Yes.
Judith Kerr. And some of the sort of classic books that I had when I was a baby, partly because people gave them to me and or I was given them, but then also new ones. And it was nice just to look at nature again and have this time where I was like bonding with my daughter but also looking at visual things. And I really, really enjoyed like showing her the world through the eyes of these illustrators and designers. And then I just thought, you know, I just stick to sort of subject matter that's close to home. Garden, but my world really, really narrowed, and I was spending a lot of time in her bedroom, and there was a big door that opened out into the garden, so I could see the changing seasons and the different plants and things emerging. And I suppose I just kind of drew inspiration from what was there.
So there's a question that I ask everybody, which is there a pattern that got away or a dream pattern that you covered, something that you would add to your collection if you could?
I think probably like anything by Gucci. I think they have the most amazing patterns. I can't think of like one specific example. Or a Hermes scarf, which probably I don't know if I would wear it, but I would really like to own one day.
Frame it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've got quite a lot of my own framed scarves. I don't have this room, sorry.
They take up quite a lot of space.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. I think, yeah, probably something print like by Gucci. There's like one of their like, beautiful silk shirts or something.
In the recent sort of collections anything.
I just, all of them.
I mean, there's a real kind of poise to the Gucci designs.
Oh, I just love them. Yeah.
And which of these patterns would you save from house fire?
Oh, the baby grow.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
I don't know. Sad. Hopefully all of them, but yeah, the baby grow.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. It's sentimental, isn't it?
Such sentimental value.
But it also, because I have kept so few things. And also, if my clothes burned down to the ground, I could go and buy new ones.
Yes, it's a good excuse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's nice that you choose to save the baby grow. I think that what's interesting about that is that it's not wearable anymore for anybody.
No.
Like, Vivian's grown out of it. Yeah. It's just a sort of object that represents a certain moment in time.
Yeah, but I have quite, I don't know, I wouldn't say I'm like much of a hoarder. Like, I like objects and collecting them. So yeah, I guess that would be one. But I don't know what I would ever do with it. Just keep it.
Yeah, it's special.
Yeah, it's special.
Thank you so much for sharing your patterns with me, Karen.
Thank you. I really enjoyed really that. Nice that was chat so with nice. You. Oh, it's been nice to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining Pattern Portrait.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pattern Portraits with me, Lauren Godfrey. Follow us on Instagram at Pattern Portraits Podcast. The limited edition print accompanying this episode is available to buy now on laurengodfrey.co.uk. Join us next week for another chat about pattern.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.